Today in the headlines, New South Wales Police Commissioner Mal Lennon says the extended restrictions on protests will allow for January 26 demonstration to go ahead through Sydney CBD. A Canadian tourist has been found deceased in Kigari in Queensland, has been identified as 19-year-old Piper James. The Senate has approved tougher gun laws in response to the Bondi terror attack that killed 15 people in December. That and more coming up in the news on NITV Radio. New South Wales Police Commissioner Mal Lennon says the extended restrictions on protests will allow for a January 26 demonstration to go ahead through the Sydney CBD. The Commissioner has opted to extend controversial protest restrictions for another fortnight, meaning police cannot authorise protests in the affected areas of Sydney. This means police have greater powers to issue move-on orders if they believe demonstrators are obstructing a public area or acting in what they deem to be a hateful or disorderly manner. Commissioner Lennon says police have reduced the area impacted by the restrictions, allowing for authorised events in Hyde Park and surrounding areas.
The protest that is planned by the First Nations community on Australia Day will be managed down through College Street and out of southern Sydney. I'm satisfied that that reduces the risk to the community. On Australia Day, I expect that we'll have tens of thousands of community members, mums and dads, boys and girls, wanting to come into the CBD. This is about ensuring that we enable people to protest, enable free speech, but make sure that the community remains safe.
The federal government is being urged to lead a national approach to reduce shark encounters in Australian waters after a spate of attacks have left victims fighting for their lives. Greens Senator Peter Whish-Wilson says shark mitigation measures such as nets and drum lines are simply not working. He argued they typified what he has called a lazy and ineffective approach that needs updating based on the science. Among the four victims across 3 days is a 12-year-old boy who sustained critical leg injuries and remains in hospital. A Canadian tourist found deceased on Gari in Queensland has been identified as 19-year-old Piper James. An autopsy is due to be carried out today to confirm whether she drowned or died in a dingo attack, as her body was discovered near a pack of the animals. Police have refused to speculate on the cause of death, saying the woman's body was discovered about 90 minutes after she went for an early morning swim. Fraser Coast Mayor George Seymour says he would not be surprised if the autopsy confirms she was attacked, citing a rise in aggressive dingo behaviour.
Over the past few years, we have seen an increase in the number of attacks and the severity of it, particularly in relation to children. It is very, very concerning.
Two people have died after a freight train collided with a car in a small town in Victoria. Emergency services say the two occupants of the vehicle were hit and killed when stopped at a railway crossing on Reddy's Road in the town of Cressy, west of Geelong. The victims are yet to be formally identified. Victoria Police Acting Sergeant Jake Andrews says their preliminary investigation indicates the incident may have occurred due to driver error or car failure.
There are no signals at the crossing. It's signed only, no boom gates, no lights. And our understanding is that the vehicle travelling south come to a brief stop before entering the train line, and for some unknown reason at this stage has failed to exit the train line. We don't suspect that self-harm's at play at this stage. Based on our preliminary investigation, it appears that there may be vehicle trouble or driver error.
The Senate has approved tougher gun laws in response to the Bondi terror attack that killed 15 people in December. Its approval means that tighter restrictions are now enshrined into law, including cap on firearms during a two-year buyback period and non-Australian citizens not being able to import firearms into the country. The law also tightens background checks for gun licenses and promote intelligence sharing between agencies and states and territories when completing checks. Greens leader Larissa Waters says it's time for Australia to have a tougher framework.
There are now more guns in our community than there were in the aftermath of the Port Arthur massacre, almost double the number recorded in 2001. And at least 2,000 new firearms are lawfully entering the community every week. The Bondi tragedy was made possible by gun laws that are no longer fit for purpose. The Greens welcome today's long overdue gun law reforms.
The Senate has approved the Australian government's hate speech law after a long night of debate. The upper house voted for the reform at 11 p.m. on Tuesday night, though the National Party voted against it after failing to move amendments. Labor and the Liberals struck a deal after the government accepted several amendments from the opposition leader, Susan Lee. The law will create powers to designate organisations as hate groups and give more powers for a minister to cancel or refuse a visa if a person has spread hateful or extremist views. And now to sport. Carlos Alcaraz says bad luck in the draw may have played a part in his past Australian Open failures, but insists it's no excuse for never progressing beyond the quarterfinals in four attempts. The world number one and reigning French and US Open champion is now focused on winning the Norman Brooks Challenge Cup at his fifth try, which would make him the youngest man in the Open era to complete a career Grand Slam. Australian Alex de Minaur is also chasing his first Australian Open title and could meet Alcaraz in the quarterfinals, though the Spaniard must first get past Germany's Yannick Hafman in round two. And now for today in the weather. Perth is sunny at 21. Darwin is seeing possible storms at 26. Alice Springs is sunny at 27. Brisbane is seeing some rain at 25. Cairns is partly cloudy at 28. And Sydney is cloudy at 22. Canberra is sunny at 18. Melbourne is seeing some possible rain at 18, and Hobart is raining at 18, and Adelaide is cloudy at 19. And that wraps up the latest in news, sport and weather. You're listening to NITV Radio. Coming up later on the show, Ben Gratz brings Tina, a tropical love story, to Melbourne, to the Midsummer Festival. It's a big collaboration stage performance of drag, cabaret and more. And Dean Sanders has been recently appointed as Board's Advisor and Cultural Governance and First Nations Leadership Advisor. But first, let's talk with Tyrone Wagoner as he talks about the Borloo Bridge and how it's become a canvas for lights in Perth. Have a listen to this.
Yeah, I'm Tyrone Wagoner. I'm a Perth-based artist and designer. My heritage is from Wurundjeri Noongar, Yawuru and Ngunnawal. So I have heritage from Southwest Western Australia up to Broome, the Kimberley region, and then over to Saba Island in the Torres Strait. My role in this for Perth Fest is as an animator this year, and I'll be working on the Borloo Bridge. Lighting animation. It's pretty exciting.
Sounds really exciting. Tell us about your work as an animator on this outdoor art installation.
Yeah, so it's going to be over the kind of support beams of the bridge because they have a lighting display. And this is going to be quite heavy graphic heavy animations about the Derwent Yerrigan, Swan River, a lot of the, you know, animal life in there. And then, yeah.
And how do you create such a piece like this as an animator? Can you walk us through the process?
So I kind of do, I guess my animation style is a bit dated, but I work in kind of frame-to-frame animation. So, yeah, I draw the characters and the graphics directly on the computer, and then I kind of, you know, animate it by redrawing or manipulating the imagery frame by frame.
Tell us about some of the animals featured in your work.
Yeah, so it's probably going to be, it's mostly going to be animals you can find around Perth. So it's going to be, you know, long-necked turtles, pelicans, lots of birds, dolphins, bit of sharks there too.
And tell us about the colours involved in this animation piece on the bridge.
Yeah, it's going to be mostly blues and greens and then whatever the, you know, animal colours are. But I want it, yeah, to really pop and be really graphic and bright. So it's going to be, yeah, really saturated colours, yeah. So it's going to be, yeah, pretty bright.
This piece is due to open for the Perth Festival. Have you given it a practice run on the bridge? How does that work?
Yeah, so we did a little practice run the other night, did some testing, and it worked really well. Apparently there's going to be one more testing, and apparently it's going to be like live edits available. So yeah, after I get the video done, we're going to be sitting there testing the animation up on the screen and then remotely be able to change things in real time. So it's going to be cool. Yeah.
Have you worked on a piece like this before with your art?
Not exactly. I've done a drone show before. So I've done some light based animation stuff, but never to this, like these specifics, like the lighting on the bridge, the shape of it.
And you just mentioned there it's a new challenge for you. What have been some of the challenges in creating such a work?
So mostly it's around video, like formatting, because this bridge, it's like two-sided, so you've got to create it to reflect as well. Then, and also one side of the bridge has lots of lights, so the imagery I create is going to show up really well in terms of it, like animals and illustrative elements. The other two sections of the bridge don't have as many lights. So, I have to kind of create things slightly differently and, manipulate it, edit it, so that kind of story translates over three bridges. But if you don't see the big bridge, you're still getting something out of that story as well.
And you just mentioned story there. Can you walk us through the actual story that will be displayed with this piece of work?
Story is going to be more about Harrison Island. It's kind of an important place for Noongar people, and the Swan River, and then out to kind of Rocknest Island or Wallyup out there. It's going to just have, yeah, lots of native animals, and the importance of the river.
Sounds really lovely. What do you hope audiences will get from taking a look at this beautiful piece of work that's going to show as part of the Perth Festival?
Hope they just enjoy it, really.
Sounds really wonderful. Thank you so much, Tyrone.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Later on the show, we speak with Ben Gratz, a.k.a. Miscellaneous, as he talks us along with the collective of performers that are joining him in the programming for 2026 Midsummer Festival. Ben's not only the star taking on the stage, he's also joined by fellow Deadly performers Cleopatra Price, Dana Deason, Kian, the Hucks, and Thomas Bevan. But first, we have a conversation with Dean Sanders. He's been recently appointed as Board Advisor and Cultural Governance and First Nations Leadership Advisor at the Australian Sustainable Finance Institute. Have a listen to Dean.
Yama, you're listening to NITV Radio. War on My Man and respected cultural leader Professor Sanders brings more than three decades of experience spanning regulation, professional standards, governance and economic policy. Joining us to give more insight into his recent appointment is Dean Sanders. Thanks for jumping on, Dean.
Hey, no problem, Nori.
I've given just the briefest introduction to you. Can you introduce yourself? Who are you? Who's your mob? Where are you from?
it's always a good way of starting out. So you're not a Dean Wollongogudi, up at Mid North Coast, just above Newcastle there where you're sitting, and but I'm from country away from the freshwater people, so the freshwater streams up around Gloucester, Barrington, and on one of my countries. But I grew up in Wollongong country, grew up in Newcastle way. But since those days, I've travelled a long way away, an extra hour and a half down the road to Gadigal way. It's one of my ways, so I haven't travelled, moved very far away from country because I do tend to get back to country every week to sit there in my place, but also with family and community. The sort of work I do, the sort of fields I'm involved in, I'm a professor in law at the Newcastle University there, but I'm also a special counsel, economic special counsel to large consulting mobs, and do a lot of work for government and community and different organisations focusing on things like climate or complex problems, how do we solve those, in particular using Indigenous knowledge, Indigenous science as a way of understanding them. I've spent a long time in sort of government and corporate life and done lots of different jobs in those spaces, including in the sort of being a commissioner in government for a bit, but also working as a CEO in corporate Australia and thinking about how we are going wrong with so much of our system, so much of the way we think about economics, how we think about business, and how our culture, our knowledge systems hold the answer to those things.
Your recent appointment is with the Australian Sustainable Finance Institute. Can you tell us a little bit about that business and the role that you're taking up?
So ASFI, the Australian Sustainable Finance Institute, is the independent peak body for sustainable finance in Australia, which sounds like lots of words, but really its job is to bring together the whole of the financial system, the big banks, the superannuation companies, insurance companies, the ratings agencies, to focus on how we start to do finance in a sustainable way. And that means bringing together not just the idea of financial systems and financial services companies, but even the way we think about financial products and how they're designed and how they apply. So I've joined them in a particular role in a sort of cultural governance and board advisory role because in my typical way, I want to get inside the machines that are the ones that affect our economic system to create real change in those particular places. So I've joined to try and create some havoc there.
You will be supporting ASFI's mission to build a sustainable, resilient and inclusive financial systems, yeah? Why is it significant to have First Nations people in these leadership roles?
Look, I think this is actually the big secret to how we solve problems in this Western system. We're all of us used to seeing the disconnects and the problems between the wider economic systems and the effect that stuff has on country and on community, and Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people specifically. Now, we can sit around, as we often do, and complain about those disconnects, but I actually think the way to fix them is to change the entire financial services system, to start to think about how do we make the engines of finance, the engines of economics in this country, lean towards the central responsibility for country, so the central responsibility for caring for place and caring for our communities. Now, that's actually what finance is really about. You know, finance, when done properly, is really about making those sorts of opportunities to care for country, to generate outcomes for communities, because ultimately there is no economic system if there is no country. There is no financial services entity or no financial services solutions or no industries for people if country isn't healthy. So I think that the job is to make sure that we are pushing the engines in the right sort of way. So I've deliberately joined to bring that type of frame, to bring that type of challenge to our entire financial services. Why is it significant there? Because I think that system has been going about doing its thing for a long time, and we've had measures of success. We've had economic uplift, we've had economic outcomes for people, but as you know, there's been a great disconnect between that and country, and a great disconnect between that and communities. Not everybody gets to participate or enjoy enjoyed the benefits of a successful financial system. So it's not just bringing Indigenous voice. I'm not particularly interested in just bringing Indigenous voice and leadership to the existing system. I'm thinking about how we change that system. How do we make sure that we are getting the policy tools of the engine to focus on the right things? How do we talk about strategy in the language of whole system outcomes, whole country outcomes, not just particular shareholder outcomes? And I think that the good news is that the industry and many of our large-scale industries are interested in that conversation. They've appointed this role for that reason. They're not resiling from it. But our job is to make sure we step strongly into that conversation and help them reshape their entire system so the benefits flow to country and flow to community.
There are obviously challenges and opportunities when pursuing Australian sustainable finance. Can you tell us a little bit of what's exciting in the space?
Yeah, so financial services is a highly technical industry. I mean, it works on rules and systems and product definitions and investment strategies and outcomes measured in economic terms. There's a whole lot of mathematical science and a whole lot of investment and market sciences is behind that. But they all focus on the wrong things. They all focus on things that we try to turn into measurements and KPIs. So we've had for a long time in this country and a long time globally the language of ESG, you know, environmental sustainability governance in our economic systems. So we've always talked about ESG for a long time. Companies have had the metrics of ESG reporting for a long time. But very notably, our regulators, in particular ASIC, Australian Securities Investments Commission, which regulates financial services and the conduct of that particular marketplace, have been drawing attention to the fact that the industry is doing one thing and thinks it's meeting its compliance requirements, but ultimately can look a lot like greenwashing, where they're just by using particular metrics, particular measurements, that aren't necessarily getting all the way there to actually doing good work. Now, there's an argument in there that organisations need the leadership of groups like ASFI to help navigate what good looks like. So how do we help the financial service industry understand that? But that's also a technical role that ASFI can play around things like standards and definitions, taxonomies and education programs, the sorts of things that a group like ASFI can do. But I'm also interested in changing the hearts and minds of the financial services industry. And the financial services system has to change. It can't be about economic benefits only. It can't be about shareholder benefits only. It has to be about if we are to have a sustainable future together, then the financial system needs to embrace what sustainability genuinely means and how that generates benefits for country, not just for shareholders. There will be no shareholders if there is no country to put them on. There will be no industries if there's no country from which those industries can operate. So I'm really excited about the work with ASFI. I think there's real change in that opportunity for industry to come to the table and start talking seriously about what sustainable finance really means and how that will carry us forward into a new generation for our future. As an Aboriginal man, as a Wurundjeri man from country up that way, you know, one of our cultural terms that really matters to us and matters to me in my knowledge holding and senior role there in culture is that language of Mabulubu. Mabulubu in my language, Gatang language, means next seven again. So I take very seriously my cultural and leadership responsibility to think about the next seven generations in the decisions we take. And I think the financial services system is probably going to be here for those next seven generations. So how do I make sure we're shaping it the right way so that we actually have seven generations to look forward to? Some of the significant challenges for financial services, every bank, every super fund has its own First Nations voices, and they are proud and strong and important voices. What we tend not to have is a coordinating framework around that, a shared commitment around that. And First Nations voices inside corporate institutions can tend to get not heard very powerfully, can tend to be lost in the system of trying to create products or outcomes or employment drop opportunities. We're talking about in this particular role, how can we actually get the whole industry shaping its thinking about what sustainable future looks like and how in the role of financial services industry in a sustainable future. I'm excited about that. That's really exciting. It's a big conversation. We've got our First Nations Action Plan we're working on, how we bring other people into those systems, how we connect with communities in particular places. I'm interested in financial product design and how we might build in different investment strategies. I can see all of that ahead of us. Now, this is quite new, and ASFI is relatively new too, so we're working through what the opportunity of this stuff is. But I'm sure many of the listeners will know that we didn't win COP31 in Australia, which was intended to be held in Adelaide. That was taken by Turkey. So we don't have that particular event to look forward to. But part of the important conversation is how do we make sure we're doing this stuff on the ground in real ways that affect our communities directly. That's what I'm excited about. That's where I think the future's going to be, because the more we connect the financial services system to the country, to the ground, to the place that the communities it's operating from, the stronger it's going to be and the more sustainable the whole system's going
to
be.
For anyone who's seeking more information or wanting to get involved in the sector, where can they get more information from? Where can they go?
Yeah, look, there's great resources on the web around this conversation about sustainable finance, sustainable investing, and the way communities and mob can connect into different types of solutions. But the website for ASFI, which is a great place to start and connect to those things, is asfi.org.au. That's asfi.org.au. And, of course, there's ASFI LinkedIn pages and things like that for regular updates. So there's a whole lot of entities. And, of course, mob can look me up too. Anybody can look me up on LinkedIn or otherwise. I'm always here for a yarn. It's important. These conversations are important. And how we start navigating investment for our communities, navigating investments for our whole families and structures and systems sitting on country is going to be the answer to how we survive as a nation and an answer to how we survive as a globe. I'm always here for that yarn.
I want to thank you for jumping on and sharing with us today, Dean.
Yeah, my boy. Thank you.
That was Dean Sanders, OAM, Board Advisor and Cultural Governance and First Nations Leadership Advisor. I'm Nairi Pakai. You're listening to NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Next, we speak with Ben Gratz, aka Miscellaneous. He's along with a collective of people performing, joining the program for 2026 Midsummer Festival down in Melbourne. He shares how Tina Turner impacted his early life and self-discovery, which is explored through this story, through performance, drag, and cabaret. Have a listen to this conversation with Ben Gratz. Yama, you're listening to NITV Radio. Midsummer Festival in 2026 is exploring queer histories and futures. Today, we're joined by Ben Gratz, aka Miscellaneous. Thanks for jumping on and talking with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Can you give yourself a little bit of an intro? Who are you? Who's your mob? Where are you from?
Who am I? Who am I today? So my name is Ben Gratz, and I'm actually currently on Bundjalung country, but born and raised on Larrakia country up in Darwin. My family, my mum's side, come from Malak Malak, which is Daly River region, Murrin clan, which is Iwadja, also Kungurrugan, which is around Litchfield, and also Badu Island on the Torres Strait. And my dad is of German, English, Irish descent.
Can you tell us a little bit about who you are? Who is Ben, but also who is Miscellaneous?
So my name is Ben, as I mentioned, and I am an entertainer, so I'm a trained actor. But over the years, I've also developed the skills of directing and creative directing and producing. So I work on my own shows, but I also help to produce other events, or I creatively direct other events as well. I've worked on the National Indigenous Music Awards up in Darwin, and also was the founder of Gurumalung Festival, which is up in Darwin as well. And Miscellaneous, well, she's been around for about 26 years. And she was really born out of my passion for acting and my time in Sydney, where I really explored my identity as a queer man and merged the two and created this fabulous character. So I have been doing drag for 26 years. I've got a number of different characters. I've got a character called Bougainvillea. I also have another character called Misinformation, which was also a part of NITV as well, where we did some work, TV pop box pops during the referendum. And then, of course, I have in my new show, Tina Tropical Love Story, the character of Miss Tina.
Can you tell us a little bit of what is Tina, a Tropical Love Story?
Yeah, Tina, a Tropical Love Story is a show that I created in 2014 for Darwin Festival. And it really is part drag, part storytelling, but also part cabaret. Tells the story of when I was 16 years of age and I saw Tina Turner live in concert in Darwin, the Darwin Amphitheatre, and how that concert changed my life. So it's a one-hour show that's full of love, joy, and celebrating the iconic Tina Turner, but also tells the story of me growing up in a small town in Darwin as a queer young man up there in Darwin, and then celebrating, really. It's a celebration of the life of Tina Turner, including some fabulous artists as well.
This is part of the programming for Melbourne's Midsummer Festival. What would you say to audiences who are keen on seeing a tropical love story? What will they expect to see?
Well, for anyone that would love to come and see Tina Tropical Love Story, I would say come along. It's a joyous show. I thought I was only going to do it once at Darwin Festival, and it's now been touring around Australia and coming back to Melbourne, actually, to be at the round at Nunawading and during Midsummer, and just so thrilled. And, you know, as I mentioned, we've got some incredible performers. Got the incredible singer, Kian, who's a part of this edition. Thomas Bevan, who 2GC all the way from WA. We've got Sarumsa Suri, who's in it as well, and the Huxleys, and Cleopatra Price, and Dana Dizon, who's in it too. So it's a beautiful cabaret show that really celebrates the life of Tina Turner, but also, you know, being mob and celebrating us as mob and how Tina has really affected our lives and been such a champion for our community. And as I mentioned, seeing her live in concert when I was 16 up in Darwin, and I know a lot of people have stories of Tina Turner and how she's inspired their life or maybe changed their lives. So if you love Tina Turner, if you love rock and roll, if you love singing, come along and you will really enjoy this show.
I know you're incredibly involved in the drag scene and the creative industries. What is it like working with mob in these creative industries together to, you know, just create these amazing works and queen out?
Yeah, look, I love it. Like, I'm, you know, I was also one of the co-founders of Miss First Nation, which is a drag beauty pageant, which started in 2017, I think it was. And we just had one recently in Meanjin in Brisbane last year. And through that, I've been able to connect with so many First Nations drag artists from around the country and really create an incredible alumni of First Nations artists. And, you know, I've been a part of the creative industry since 1996 when I first moved to Sydney. Actually, 1995 when I first moved to Perth. And I just love it. Like, it's my passion. It fills my soul. And I just am so thrilled that I'm able to share the stage with so many incredible First Nations artists as a part of the team. Really, all the work I do is about providing those platforms and showing that visibility and making sure that mob are front and center and have those main stage opportunities. And yeah, I'm just so, I love the creative industries. I love drag, and I'm really excited about this tour and bringing it back to Melbourne and celebrating with the community there. And, you know, our community's been through a lot, particularly, as I mentioned, after the referendum. And I think anything we can do to create joy and bring us together and really celebrate, and I think sort of thing. So, yeah, I love it. I'm very passionate about it. I'll be doing it for a long time until people say, oh, sit down, we don't want to watch you anymore.
So this show is being put on 6th of February. Can you tell us, for people who are looking forward to attend, where can they go for information, for ticketing? Where is it at?
So you can go to theround.com.au, the Round Theatre in Nunawading. You can have a look there for the tickets and all the information. But as you mentioned, it's on Friday, the 6th of February at 8 p.m. You can also find tickets through Midsummer as well. You can probably stalk me, stalk Miscellaneous or Benny Gratz on Instagram or BRG Productions. All the information will be on there as well. But yeah, have a look, come along. It's such a joyous show. And yeah, I just really want to fill the audience with mob to be there and really celebrate Tina Turner, but also who we are as a fabulous culture.
I want to thank you for jumping on and telling us all about Tina, a Tropical Love Story today.
No, thank you very much for having me.
That was Ben Gratz, a.k.a. Miss Elanius. To find out more information about programming and performances, you can go to The Round or to the Midsummer Festival 2026 website. You're listening to NITV Radio.